I just flew in from Austin, and boy, my arm's tired. Hi there, welcome to another episode of EE Journal's long-standing electronics engineering podcast hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. This week, we've got the science behind why swearing feels so good, an introduction to a new security IC, and the goods on Vita. So, maybe you've heard about Vita, but not exactly sure what they're about. Maybe you haven't heard about them ever before, or maybe you're a seasoned veteran like myself, but you're curious about the newest developments in VME and VPX. Well, let me bring in the one and only Jerry Gipper. He's going to explain all of this and more.
My guest today is Jerry Gipper from Vita. All right, Jerry, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's good to meet you, Amelia. It's the first time I've ever done one of these, so this is going to be fun for me to participate in this.
Well, thank you so much. So first, for my audience who may not know, what is Vita and what are you guys all about?
Well, Vita's been around since about 1982 or 83 is when they were first founded, mostly a users group for VME bus. And that evolved to where they became a nonprofit organization to bring the members together to help advocate and promote VME bus. And then as time went on, they started becoming involved in working on the standard for VME bus and became an official standards development organization. They originally started out being accredited through IEEE, but then they switched over to being accredited through ANSI. So we work closely with ANSI. And over the years, the whole concept of open standards can open the markets to new things. We started realizing that VME bus had a certain amount of work that needed to be done. It ran out of gas. Then it was time to start looking at other things. So they opened up the door to other things. So it wasn't just VME bus anymore. It was mezzanine cards of different types. Then things like VPX, which is the new backplane standard that we're working on. Actually, it's been over 10 years now I've been working on that. So that's the next big thing. But we've got software programs going on. We've got all kinds of different form factors, system management tools. So it's more than just a standards development organization, because we also do marketing for helping develop the ecosystem. And what's really cool about Vita, I think, is that it's got a pretty good mix of both the supplier side and of the user side. Mm-hmm. Some organizations are really heavily biased one way or the other, but Vita's got both. And what's really interesting to me, too, is to watch how each side tends to take the leadership role in certain situations. Mm-hmm. So the users will drive certain standards because they have the best perspective on that standard. Well, at times the supplier side will drive it because they have the best perspective, but then they both collaborate together. And it's really an amazing process to watch this happen. I sit through a lot of the technical meetings, and it's kind of like Spock mind meld exchange thing when the two groups go back and forth and negotiating what a standard should include. And then once a standard will get to a certain point, that's where some of my skills come in with marketing and so on. We'll help put together a marketing program to develop an ecosystem, because you can have the greatest products, but if you don't have an ecosystem that supports all the things that go with it, it's not going to go anywhere. Yeah. So we've demonstrated success with that in VME and VPX and FMC and numerous other standards, PMC, XMC. Long nutshell, that's what Vita is all about.
Excellent. So, Jerry, how do you see the role of open standards and open modules changing over time?
Well, as I mentioned, our tagline reads open standards, open markets. And it's kind of strategic how we say that, because you got to have the open standards will then create markets that are open to lots of people. And we've seen that phenomenon for many, many years. What I see is it just continues to grow. We're watching now where you're starting to see organizations like SOSA and the Open Group and some of these others realizing the value of it, and they're starting to collaborate a lot more. That's something we've never done a good job of over the years. So there's a great trend for the collaboration between the different standards, because none of them are perfect for all applications. None of them can do all of it, but at the same time, it needs to be done. So the groups are working together to get the work done. The members from these various groups may be the same, but because each has a focus in different ways, they can push things through a little bit more efficiently rather than trying to do everything all at once. It's just so overwhelming. So I see the need for open standards not going away anytime soon. My mantra nowadays is open systems architectures. And you'll hear a lot of people refer to themselves as OSAs and using OSAs. And that includes software like Linux is an open system architecture. Hardware like our VPX is an open systems architecture. There's just going to be more and more of that. But they also have to interoperate. They have to do this. They have to do that. these groups are extremely instrumental in making that happen. So they've got a lot of work, but it's going to speed the adoption because this stuff's so complicated. You can't just go in there with a blank slate. You got to have some kind of a guidelines and standards to say, do this or nothing will operate with something else ever. Interoperability is what's really driving a lot of that. And the fact that a lot of them use, they're very small niches, so they need to have lots of people collaborating together to build this whole ecosystem that's extremely important to us as well.
All right, so let's talk about VME and VPX. Now, I know you have an opinion about this one, but where do you see VME ending? Is it going to end? And is VPX ever going to take over from VME?
Give you the real simple answer is that, yeah, someday VME will end, and yes, someday VPX will take over, but probably not in my lifetime for either answer. The thing that is interesting to all of us is technology, we always think about how fast technology moves, but at the same time, there's some things that they don't need to move that fast.
Right.
And VME's done a great job. It was a great foundation. I mean, you can go on and on and on about all the great things they've done with it. It's continued to thrive. It's expensive to replace a VME-based system, so they still want to make incremental upgrades to it without doing a whole forklift upgrade. And VPX isn't a replacement to VME by any stretch. It wasn't designed to even be a replacement to VME. It's a different animal for different things, but some applications can use either technologies, especially when you need higher performance. So VPX works really well. And you'll see some of that type of stuff happen. VPX, it takes a long time to design these technologies in. You know, it's interesting. I've been talking to people, and when I was at Motorola, we'd track a product. And when we first introduced a product, we'd sell the lights out of it. We'd sell like crazy. For the first 18 months, we were like, wow, this is a home run. And then all of a sudden, the product would start tapering off, and it would actually decline in sales. And the management would start to panic and think, oh my God, what are we going to do? We're going out of business. Then what would happen is maybe 2 or 3 years down the road, that product would start creeping back up. And sometimes the rapid pace depended on the product and the applications it was in, sometimes a slow pace. But then it would have a plateau that lasted upwards of 20, 25 years and a tail that seems to last another 20 years
right.
or so. And so we're seeing that right now with VPX. It's kind of hit that big spike during the first 5 years or so what was being designed in. It's in labs all over the place. Now we're seeing a little bit of a lull. Well, the labs are full. They've got what they need. And there's always new programs coming on, so there's still some stuff going on. But these programs are starting to kick in one by one. It's especially tough in the defense industry because their programs can sometimes take eons, it seems like, to get done, right? So it doesn't happen real fast sometimes, as fast as we'd like to think it happens. It's definitely like not like a consumer item where you come out with something for Christmas and you sell the lights out of it and then it goes away totally. Once you're in a program, you're in it for a long time, and that's when you start reaping the benefits of all that work. So yeah, VPX will get there. VME is definitely stretching out a long time, which is keeping a lot of companies pretty happy and pretty busy, and the incremental changes they have to make are really easy to do, so that helps cover a lot of their costs because developing VPX isn't cheap either. But I think eventually you'll see one replace the other. Who knows what else is new out there? They could be working on something right now today that I don't know about yet that could be the next curve that we have to go chase.
All right, Jerry, it's time for your off-the-cuff question now. I know you've been involved in the Boy Scouts organization at some times, and tell me more about that.
Oh, man. I was a scout as a kid, but not a very dedicated scout. I only did it for a couple of years, and I got tired eventually of teaching them everything I knew. So I was like, okay, I knew all the knots and everything, but I'd never got any rank out of it. So I kind of gave up on it. But then as my son got into it, I left the corporate world. I had more time on my hands. Some scout leaders kind of corralled me at a camp out one time. They tricked me into it by having me organize trips. The first trip was a mountain biking trip. They said, oh, why don't you organize it? I said, okay, no problem. I like that. They said, well, we're going to do snow camp out. Why don't you organize it? And I was like, oh, that sounds fun. So I did. And at that camp out, they cornered me and says, would you be interested in being a scoutmaster? And I said, I'd have no idea what a scoutmaster does or anything. And I thought, well, it sounds intriguing. I owe some community hours, some service hours. You know, I didn't have time. I was working all the time. So I ended up getting into it and enjoyed it. And I was scoutmaster for 3 years, learned a lot. Now I still work with the same troop, even though I'm 1,000 miles away from them. I still work with them. I'm kind of like their super secretary. I run the website for them, the finances and stuff. I keep an eye on, make sure they operate smoothly so that the other adults can focus their time on working with the kids that are local to them, because I can do what I do remote.
Awesome. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Jerry.
thank you. It's good to have you here. I hope to see you next year too, by the way, but it's always fun to see you and to spend some time with you. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Amelia, and I can swear like a sailor. I mean, I don't do it all the time or anything, like in this podcast, for instance, but in the car, in rush hour traffic, yep, I can even make a longshoreman blush. So, in this week's news you may have missed, there is actually a science behind why it feels so good to swear, or at least why it relieves pain. So, in a research study at Keele University in Staffordshire, England, Richard Stevens, a psychologist and author of Black Sheep, The Hidden Benefits of Being Bad, tested the responses of 67 of his undergrad students. In this experiment, he had his students put their hands in a bucket of ice-cold water and leave them there as long as they could. And they would do it twice. For one dip, he would instruct the students to not swear, and with the other dip, swear just once. And to make the tests fair, the order of the swearing words and the neutral, not offensive words were set in a random order. To set up the study for each student, Stevens actually asked them for 5 different words they would potentially yell out if they dropped a hammer on their thumb, and for 5 words they would use to describe a table. Then he took the first swear word that appeared in the first list and its counterpart from the second list. Okay, so you know what he found? Yep, his students experienced less pain while swearing. According to his study, the subjects who swore were able to keep their hands in the ice-cold water almost 50% longer than when they used their table-based non-cursing words. And even further, when his volunteering students swore, their heart rates went up and their perception of pain went down. So, all of this research is outlined in the book, Swearing is Good for You: The Amazing Science of Bad Language, and it even includes further studies that correlate aggression with pain management and the pain relief differences between various flavors of bad words. If this sounds like something you would enjoy reading further, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com with more information. You know what makes me want to swear? I mean, other than that bumper-to-bumper on I-5, no, security. Now, there has been a whole lot of misleading information thrown around the mainstream press about Spectre and Meltdown, and it's got our well-meaning civvy non-engineers running for the hills. But we know different, right? But what about real security solutions? Well, I'm going to throw 3 letters your way. P-U-F. Puff. Or physically unclonable functions. Now, if you didn't know, they're kind of like fingerprints for semiconductor devices. And for security applications, PUFs are an outstanding, secure way to uniquely identify an individual device. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled Security ICs Deliver a Stronger Level of Protection, I sit down with Scott Jones from Maxim Integrated and talk about physically unclonable functions and how you can use them to secure your next system design. You can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by heading on over to EE Journal's Chalk Talk section by clicking the link below the player or by checking out YouTube, keyword EE Journal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, you know, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of January 26th, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.